When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Up a prue. I think that should stay in. Pull up if you have a prue, everybody. It is me, super fan Jeremy Cobb. My pronouns are he, him. We are here for another super fan chat, but it's not just me. I am joined by another super fan. Please say hi, super fan.
Hi, super fan. I'm super fan Alice. Pronouns she, her. And who are we joined by today, Jeremy?
Oh, we are joined by a very, very special guest. We are joined by, for the first ever time, one of the casts has crossed over into the super fan chat lounge that we have here. Because, yes, we record these in a very expensive lounge that we rent. That is where all the Patreon money goes.
That's where the budget goes. All on the super fan chat
Another
lounge.
Mimosa, please. Could I get another one? Thank you.
Oh, yes, our personal butler is serving us drinks.
Thank you, Jeeves. Thank you.
Yes, it's me, Grace Kelly Miller, who plays Gwendolyn. My pronouns are she, her. And yeah, I have come and infiltrated Superfan Chats today. It's been something we've been toying with for a while. And as there were only two superfans available this week, I thought, well, why not come and join in? So I will, for this purposes, obviously, listeners, obviously, I'm not going to come in with theories because I do know what's happening. So my main job is to try and not give anything away and have a poker face so Jeremy and Alice don't find out all the secrets. But what I will be doing is I will read out the recaps and then Jeremy and Alice will have at it with their points. And it just means they can't say anything too mean about me because I'm here.
I had so many mean comments lined up.
Oh, no.
That's all I have written is specifically mean things about Grace.
Grace is a big, smelly poo-poo head.
Grace sounds like she smells.
Yeah, so we'll see how it goes. Like, I'm also, the useful thing about me having here is I'm also one of the editors, so I listen to the episodes quite a lot, so I can verify some things. I hope I'm going to say this and then they're going to ask me a question and I'm going to be like, I don't remember. Let me text Ben Galpin or Pip. They are my go, or David, of course, as well, but you know.
For context, Grace, I don't know if you feel comfortable saying, but how long ago did you all record these episodes versus when they were actually like released and when we're recording now, I guess?
That's a really good question, Jeremy Cobb. I would say April.
Okay. Maybe? Okay, so we're talking about like a 4-month gap.
Yeah,
then,
so it was these episodes are just after Ben has gone off to America. And he's been back for a while now.
Yeah.
It could be even further away. So it definitely, like, re-listening to them was definitely a bit of a like rejudge for me as well. Mm. And we are quite far ahead as well, so it's just like all a big like wibbly wobbly timey wimey editing world that it is. So yeah, but I think on the whole I should be able to kind of verify any facts. And you know, you can ask me some reasonable questions about the actual thing. I just I need to be good and not like get involved with the theories because, you know, that would be bad.
So the game for us is to read your poker face.
I would just turn my screen off.
No.
No. Okay. You can try. My poker face is nowhere near as good as David Knight's. Alas.
He's got an excellent poker face.
He is a fortress, honestly. Yeah. When we have our, I suppose this is an experience of like having the no small talks that we put out on Patreon, and he will just sit there with this blank expression. And as we all like, you know, come up with our own theories of what could be going on at that particular point. So but so this
just
will be
a serene stare.
Serene stare. Yeah, I'll try and be as serene as I can. But I'm very excited to be with you both.
Aww.
And just get to hang out.
We're excited
out.
To have you.
Yeah, this is cool.
Yeah, lovely lounge. Margaritas aplenty.
Smoking jackets as well. Nobody even smokes in here. But
yeah,
we have smoking
people
jackets.
Got monogrammed slippers as well.
Yeah, obviously.
With each of our initials.
Absolutely. It's an offshoot of the Rambler's Rest, and this is the particular Superfan Chats lodge.
Exactly. Exactly. Should we jump on in with episode, the summary of episode 30? My God. 73?
73. All the way back to episode 30. Oh, my.
What happened in episode 30?
Oh, God. That's
that
a
was, I think,
that?
Right after. I think it was right after I left.
Yeah.
I think it was like right after Dwayne.
It's really close to like Battle Down the Hatches and stuff like that. Yeah. I'll look
I think
it
that's
up
when,
at some point.
Wasn't that the origin then of the Gaius being like, I have 10,000 gold pieces.
Is that the origin? Okay.
I think it was that episode.
It's going to be really annoying, so I am just going to look now. Episode 30 was In the Wake. Absolutely. You smashed it, Jeremy.
Whoa.
That was the origin of 10,000 gold.
That's amazing.
Yay. I'm very impressed.
Thank you.
I think you win Superfan.
I think you might.
Thank you. They come out with, they're bringing a crown out right now. Butlers are bringing a crown.
Yay! Okie dokie. So I shall read you all out a summary of episode 73. Well, having been teleported to Kissing Beck without the fifth member of the Fake Mark Five, the party contact Oren to gauge his safety. As satisfied as they can be with his choice, in air quotes for our listeners, to help Petra for an unspecified time, the now averager lads take in their surroundings and spot the henge Petra mentioned on the horizon. After a quick flight over the Ferrigold tea fields, the party investigates the henge at the centre of the crops and discover a small well-like hole in the middle of the nine stones. Ever curious, Juna polymorphs herself and Enkidu into frogs to explore the depths of the well. Unfortunately, the spell doesn't allow them to retain their usual presence of mind, and they go full frog. Some amphibian adventures later, the pair return to Gwendolyn and Gaius and find themselves magically revitalized. Realizing that the waters within the henge can replenish spell slots, somewhat like a fantasy energy drink dubbed Hengeball by Juna. They utilise the effects of the water and the surrounding tea plants for a divination spell, asking of the possibilities of the henge's power if all of it were to be drawn. The plants respond with an eruption of growth, covering the stones and nestling the party in a boundless bush. With the further confirmation of the power of the henges, the party make use of the water once again with some sending spells. Though Juna is aware that this newfound energy may not last, the party contact Casula and request she look after their horses Pip and Lord Crumpet after they'd left them behind in Forlost Vale, and they also procure some advice from a bison-riding ginger that folk tales may be a useful source in their continued search for information on the origin of the henges. With the early morning approaching and the comfy and cozy new plant growth around them, the party finally settle down for a night's sleep.
I'll jump in first and say I want to commend the team for the way that you all handled Ben's absence, because obviously, whenever you do a series like this that is taking place over a very long period of time, life is going to get in the way. And this is one of the best instances, I think, of it just feel like if you didn't know that it was happening, you might be like, oh, no, this the treacherous unbodied person has taken Orin away. And what's happening? Like it feels like a genuine cliffhanger with the previous episode. And then this episode's like, oh, OK, I guess we have to keep going. Like it. I really liked that.
Yeah.
What did you think, Alice?
Oh, I loved it. And it was so funny with the last episode. I got so stressed out thinking, oh, no, she's taken Orin, and then realized what you'd done. The story was so good that I'd forgotten that it was a real life mechanic. And and then it was so reassuring getting that message from him at the beginning of the episode and knowing that Orin's having a nice time as well as Ben touring the States. So, yeah, it was really well handled. Yeah, completely.
Yeah. And also, I want to commend you all for not just the edited in audio from Ben in this particular episode, but the whenever you've done it in past episodes, because I would call that just using the medium to your advantage. Yeah. You're using a pre-recorded audio medium. Why not just go to people and be like, yeah, could you record this thing?
Yeah.
And just play it. And it always is great. So I love that.
Yeah, it was a particular highlight when you did the message replying to Gwen. That was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's really fun, like, when you're kind of hiding that sort of thing from the rest of the cast. Like, I certainly, like, when I had Jeremy at the ready to be like, look, we've got a reply already. it was really fun. Like, me and Vicky had, like, been like, oh, yeah, then we can say this and we can record like this. And I just know that Vicky would have just been really excited knowing that she had, you know, Ben ready in the pocket to be like, here's a message from Orin back. And it was nice because, like, obviously we were already missing him.
Yeah.
And then it was just like, oh, there he is. There's our boy.
I think even what you just expressed, Grace, is kind of is one of the strengths further of this podcast, I think, is the friendship between you all as people. I think that, like, that creates, if I was going to describe, like, the tone of the podcast, I would say it has a very warm tone. Yes. And I think that a lot of that really comes through with the warm feelings that you all have for each other, and the warm relationship, the warm atmosphere that you cultivate as a group between yourselves. I think that really comes through, even if the characters are maybe not feeling great or are upset at each other. I think it really sets a great tone.
That's lovely. Oh, gosh, you guys aren't bullying me at all. This is lovely.
Don't worry, it's coming.
I do want just to say, like, the smoothness of kind of working it into the story, it helped so much that Ben had told us ages ago. But, like, David had, I think he had so many different possibilities for the way he was going to have Ben leave us or have Orin leave us. All that kudos is all down to David and his wonderful mind.
Yeah. He is a clever man.
Shout out to baby David.
Yeah.
He is.
Absolutely. I want to say I love the imagery of Enkidu flying through the air, carrying Kai, Gwendolyn, and Judah. That's such just like a weird, like this really tall half-orc woman just balanced on his back as he's like carrying an elderly gnome. And then I'm not even sure where Guy was positioned in that group.
Well, I think Guy was flying separately, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So Guy was carrying Juno. Basically, they'd both gone off and they were just like leaving us behind. there was definitely the awkwardness of Gwendolyn and Enkidu, like, oh, okay, gonna carry me, sure.
What? It took me such a long time to work out the sticks because I did not picture them flying upright. I was sort of picturing them flying that way, like Superman, and then you actually like riding on his back.
Yeah.
And so then finding out that you were doing a piggyback was so weird. It's such a long image to be flying through the air. And I thought that Guy, Juno, and Ruana were full Studio Ghibli.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Kiki's Delivery Service.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just love, like, you know, Juno and Guy having a full-on gossip about finally hearing about what happened with the boys and the dragon and the pastry dragon and all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's always really fun to play on those different dynamics between the team. But it's also weird getting used to the dynamics without Orin.
Yeah.
as well. Mm. Like, it's like, oh, wait a minute, how's this going to work with four of us?
Well, mainly just no investigation checks.
No investigation checks. Nobody rolled above 10 in this episode. It was bad.
and no flash of genius either.
No,
like you don't have Ben like smiling at baby David with his finger hovering over the button, just being like, I can make that I can add a plus 5 to that at any given moment.
Although I do think there was above a 10, yeah. And it was Daryl rolling for whether Enkidu gave away the secrets of the night you separated, and it was completely pointless because Guy was there.
Like, look at me being all smooth. Guys going blah, 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 blah.
And then this happened.
Yeah. I love it.
Another thing that jumped out to me, the idea of Juna being kinky and into porn cracked me up. I don't know what it is. It was just like, just bringing that out was...
That gnome is filth.
I love that as a piece of character development.
I mean, she is, yeah. Isn't she? Like, she's lived a life.
Yeah, I feel like you don't end up with that many tattoos at her age unless...
You've had some fun.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like Juna had an entirely separate, like, level 1 to 20 adventure way back in the day, and then like just took some time off, sort of let everything atrophy back down, and is now going on another one.
Yeah, she did like 50 years looking after the roses, just like, you know, incognito, seeing where she needs to be, and then back on an adventure. About time.
It's weird thinking of her being that static now we've met her for this amount of time.
Yeah, it's like she's just kind of in, like, sleeper mode almost. Yes. And then it's just like, right, I'm off now. Bye.
Yeah. Good. Well, because she really does seem like a very active person.
Yeah.
Like a very active and energetic person. So it's odd to think of her not expressing that through her whole life.
Yeah. I mean, certainly she did plenty of work at the Roses. Like, she was, like, the chef, but also, like, you know, there's three kids running around. And Gwendolyn was a pain in the ass, so she had plenty on her hands, like, especially until Casula turned up. There was no real mother figure in the house either, so that's quite a few years with two young girls who got into everything and a father who was going off on business a lot. So I think even though she wasn't off adventuring, she was definitely busy lady was Juna, just in a more homestead environment.
Yeah, I guess the active part was having to take care of like some super energetic kids who were getting into all sorts of mischief for years.
Who were probably
on
really good at making like booby traps and escape scenario.
Well, she's there for 50 years, so she was also looking after Selamund, which is the dad, and so through his childhood, and he's like, you know, the starter of this business and inventor. So yeah, they're, I mean, all the things that he must have tested out.
It's like Home Alone. Yeah. she's like the Wet Bandits or whatever they're called in that movie. Just having to like fight through an absolute like barrage of horrifying traps that Gwen's dad has created.
Juna, check out my dragon. It does fire.
She's just trying to get on with making the food.
I also really enjoyed the conversation. Where they were cycling through all the different animal options. Because I was like, oh, this is actually really interesting. Like, listening to the different, like, oh, yeah, okay, we could be dragonflies. That's true. Yeah. We could fly. Yeah, okay. But we could do something that's like a fish and see if we have to breathe. Oh, that's true. Like, I don't know. Something about that, like, hearing that conversation, I was sitting there thinking, yeah, I wonder. Maybe they could be otters. Well, but then they have to follow that way. So settling on frogs was a fun one.
It was the smartest choice. I was sad no one mentioned penguins, but yes, frogs was a good choice. Better than dragonflies. Mm.
Yes, I agree. Perhaps less likely to get eaten.
Yeah.
Do we have confirmation of whether penguins exist in this world?
Oh, maybe no one's ever seen a penguin. Oh my God, the sadness.
Somebody call David. David, there have to be penguins.
Or even Orin, because I imagine like Woden Isles is more likely are you going to find penguins?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Colder climate. Mm.
But I feel like everyone in the Woden Islands would have killed and eaten them hundreds of years ago.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Penguins are pretty chill. Like, I seem to recall stories of when people went to Antarctica, they would just sort of pick them up. Yeah. Like, because the penguins didn't know what a human was. So they're like, oh, hey, man. And they just come over and grab a penguin. And then its friends would never see it again.
Oh, no.
What happened to Bill? He went off with those new guys.
Oh, man.
Aww.
Yeah. So that's how Oren saw penguins. He was a researcher who grew up eating penguin.
Delicacy in the Woden Isle.
Absolutely. Also, the idea that they are now mentally frogs.
Yeah.
I knew, like, as a DM sitting there, I can imagine that David's sitting there be like, yeah, go for it. realizing, like, wondering if you guys were going to think of, like, hey, would we still be able to, because that is a big thing with polymorph, is that you're just now that animal. You're not able to behave like yourself anymore.
I'd messaged David because there's a moment where it happens in the second season of Critical Role. And they turn into moths, and then they're just like, oh, now I'm just a moth chewing on a curtain for an hour. Like, like, look. So I just, like, had privately messaged David and going, is this going to be like the moths? And he was just like, yes, it is. And I was just like, I'm keeping my mouth shut because I want to see how these two react to that happening. And it was so worth it.
Yeah.
It was absolute gold. Like, just, especially the combination of Juna and Enkidu doing that. And then, like, the way Daryl was just so dryly just adding Ribbit.
He really got inside the mind of a frog.
He really did.
Kudos to Daryl.
It's unknown talent.
The tattooed frog was also a lovely touch.
And the scimitar.
Yeah.
Was it a real tiny scimitar, or was it sort of markings like a scimitar?
I feel like the idea of it was that it was a genuine, just like a mini scimitar.
The frog just has a sword.
It's so cute.
Just a heavily tattooed elderly frog, and then like an angsty, sort of brooding armed frog.
Sharing a worm.
Yeah. That's also a combo. One of the things I love about it is when we get to see like unusual combos of characters. And I feel like Enkidu and Juna is not one that we get to see a lot.
Certainly not having japes. I feel like
no
deep conversations, maybe.
Mm.
Like a fireside. Because yeah. Juna's a very good person to have a deep conversation with. Because she's got all those ears.
Yeah.
And Enkidu is so respectful of her. Like, especially when they first met, he was so sort of deferent almost.
Mm.
So him having fun with Juna is a really fun combo.
I agree.
Enkidu needs to chill out more, have more fun.
Yeah.
It's like he's got loads of people in his head and it's really serious or something.
It's like he's got the weight of the world on his shoulders.
Yeah. Like, well, I wonder what he was like before he had a bunch of people inside of his head.
Mm.
Like, you know what I mean? Because we don't get to see the other side of him. We only see, like, him having had this possibly tragic backstory. We don't really know all the details. but after having had, like, this seemingly very difficult and dark backstory that he now has all these people in his head, we don't see the pre backstory in Kidu, where he may have just been like some fun dude who was like, yeah, I love to laugh. I love to go out for a nice jape. He was like an aspiring stand-up comedian or bard or something, like before all this happened.
Yes. I mean, we know he broke into brothels and also a palace. So that sounds like japes, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's just having a laugh. Yeah. As you do, breaking into a palace. Also, the growth of the plants, in contrast to the withering of the plants, when Juna was casting divination, I found that really interesting.
It was so cool. It was such a nice image.
Well, I was wondering also if it had it, like, at first I was like, is this some indication about whether she's one of the good petals or the bad petals? Because, like, last time it's like, oh, they're withering. Oh, no. Is that potentially even loosely tied to, like, what kind of petal she is? Then when they're growing, it's like, oh, could it be that she's like the one in the middle? Is that what that's an indication of? And then David was like, well, it's an indication that the magic if you engage with this, like if you unleash the magic of this place, then like there's growth that would happen, I think is what he was kind of saying. But still, you never know.
Yeah, that's a really cool thought.
Yes. Grace has adopted the serene stone face.
Oh, yeah, there she is.
I just realized I was chatting a lot, and I was just like, I need to let you two just do your thing and listen. So I'm glad it's coming across as serene. I'm glad.
Yes.
It was so serene. Mm-hmm. I felt very calm just looking at you, actually.
You are so welcome.
Just a soothing face.
So with divination, do flowers like normally wither as you kind of take the goodness out of them? Is that sort of why that went like that? Or is it very specific to Juna, the flower thing?
I think it's specific to Juna. The spell itself does not really mention flowers. It is essentially that you ask, I think it's like you ask a higher power of some kind about an event that is going to happen within the next 7 days, or could happen within the next 7 days, I guess. And it will answer you in some way that may be cryptic. I don't think it's usually meant to be inaccurate. I think it's usually, let me look at the exact language of the spell. Your magic and an offering put you in contact with a god or a god's servants. You ask a single question concerning a specific goal, event, or activity to occur within 7 days. The GM offers a truthful reply. The reply might be a short phrase, a cryptic rhyme, or an omen. This would have been an omen, I think would be the best way to describe it. The spell doesn't take into account any possible circumstances that might change the outcome, such as the casting of additional spells or the loss or gain of a companion. And then there's a 25% chance that the reading is random if you cast the spell more than once before your long rest, your next long rest. But that wasn't the case here. So
No. It
may have been that it manifested in the way that it did because it was Juna casting the spell. And because she has that was what I was thinking, was that it was manifesting the way it did because it was colored by Juna's specific magic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If we do choose to interpret it like that, as well as the Henge also enacting, we still don't know what Juna is, whether she's good, no, dark, light, or neutral.
Mm-hmm.
Although one on, one off does imply balance, right?
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah.
And we don't know if that's if that was meant as an indication of that, or if it was just the omen itself, or if it's possibly both.
Sorry, I did a face, which is not great for audio.
It was a good face.
They both did fantastic faces, listeners. They were very curious faces, and really drew me in as a viewer.
Thanks, guys.
I'm also like, I'm wondering, is the party going to go back and try and snag some of this water? Because sure, the water, when you come down off the water, it can be pretty rough. But the initial, like, take a shot, just a quick shot of the water. And how much, like, would that restore any spell slots? You know what I mean? Little 5-hour energy, like on the go?
I think they did try and fill up some, like, drinking things, didn't ya?
Yeah, they filled up some water skins.
So there we go.
Oh, were those taken from you, though? When did they leave you those when security picked you up?
Yes, yeah.
Oh.
Talking of security, shall we move into the next episode?
Yes.
What a segue.
Not that it's in my recap, but yeah, the party's stuff wasn't touched, like, other than it was carried, but nothing was, like, confiscated or anything.
Right. So security was okay with you stealing their magic water?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose because it's not really a limited supply there. So it's just kind of flowing.
Maybe they just thought it was water and they didn't do like the festival thing where they smell it to check its vodka on.
Maybe they don't even know.
Oh?
Who knows?
Because
they didn't know why they were all asleep.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
So maybe they don't know that that's what it can do.
Yeah.
But let me give a little recap to episode 74, Talk of the Town. With the entirety of the party having succumbed to sleep at the Henge, they awake in rather different surroundings, as we were just mentioning. Gwendolyn having drunk the least of the Henge Bowl, being the first to wake in the Ferrycold Tea Infirmary. Well rested but perplexed, the Abrica lads are greeted by Dr. Humbert Mattis, who informs them that they've been asleep for the past 2 days. As they reel from the loss of time, they reluctantly sign legal documents, absolving the Ferrycold Tea Company and its estate from any responsibility regarding what had happened to them. Leaving with tea-filled goodie bags in hand, it became clear that their long nap had become something of the talk of the town, which was now in full festival flow to celebrate the end of the Twaintide Tea Tournament. The Abracalads secured lodgings in a cramped room at the Swan Inn before heading out in search of folk tales. Juna traded the story of Foxcoy Blossom with a stable hand named Kosh, who shared a story of the local henge and sold them 4 horses for the journey to come. In search of more legends, they made their way through the reveling crowds, catching a glimpse of the winning team, the Shattered Runes, a quintet of orcish ladies banqueting in pride of place on a stage. Heading into a tavern for some strawberry daiquiri refreshments, the party were approached by Eustace Hograthian, who made a wager with Guy as to who could tell the best story. On declaring himself the winner, the charming dwarven bard asked the Fatemark Four if they would help him get his job back.
A very effective... I'm loving these recaps. These recaps are excellent.
Lovely. So much of them have stolen from David, but some of it's me.
Well, Alice, what are your initial thoughts on this episode?
I did want to know a little bit more about the tea dreams. I wanted to know whether these were real people, whether they went into sort of other world where they sort of met characters who might be important later, or just like parallel universe friends. Like maybe they would be on this quest with those people in another universe or something. I thought that was, there was just something really fun and intriguing about that whole idea.
Yeah, I completely agree. I thought, especially given that David actually let the cast describe who the people were, and I like, yeah, I'm wondering how, what the significance of that is. And specifically like the tea dream, it almost reminds me of weirdly of 2001 A Space Odyssey, like the ending when he's suddenly just in a hotel. Like he goes through the Stargate and he's just like in a he's like in this nice hotel, like, oh, I'm just chilling. It's like you drink some of this magic water, pass out, and suddenly you're just having tea with somebody. And this person, the way I almost interpreted it is like the person who showed up may have been real in some sense, but also like was almost created from the person who was dreaming. That was how it almost felt. Like by having the players make it up, it felt like, oh yeah, this is the person that you feel would be sitting across from your character having tea.
That is cool. Yeah. Yeah, just their perfect tea friend in that their mind made. I love that. Yeah, that's really cool. I do worry about Guy being in like a grove of skeletons drinking tea.
Right? Yeah. And now what are they just pouring the tea in? It's just like it's Pirates of the Caribbean just running through the bones.
Yeah, it's a really creepy image. And then just this ginger having a nice time with him. Different ginger. This is a redhead. I'm allowed to say that. I am a ginger.
Yes. And Juna's tea dream companion, I believe, was a gnome woman.
Yes.
And Kidu's was a half-orc warrior woman. And he also said that he didn't know her name. Like, when he woke up, another shout-out to Daryl with his performance, wake up like, wait, but you didn't tell me your name.
Yeah, that was so great.
Yeah. And then Gwen's was Uncle Iroh as a gnome.
That's just me being silly most of the time.
Before you had said that it was Uncle Iroh, and you were like, it's an old man. I was like, okay. And you're surrounded by white lotuses. And I'm like, oh, yeah, wait a minute. And there was like one or two other things you said, where I was like, wait a minute. I really liked that. That was cute.
That is exactly the desired effect. I just love Uncle Iroh. He's one of my favorite characters in Avatar. And so I was just like, I know who I want to have tea with.
Aww.
Honestly, yeah, he's a great character. He's incredibly wholesome.
Mm-hmm. Apart from, like, all the people, like, probably died when he was, like, leading an army. But, you know.
Yes. He had he was a wholesome man with an unwholesome past.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, we've all got our skeletons.
So is Guy.
Guy's having tea with it. Also, the 2 full days of sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
I always love that in fantasy when people wake up and everyone goes, oh, you've been asleep for 2 days, but you're better now. I always really enjoy it because I'm like, I don't think I could. I struggle to stay asleep past 10 o'clock.
I mean, if you're magically enchanted, maybe that helps.
I need to find me a henge. I wanna sleep till 2.
You'll have a really productive day and then you'll just sleep for ages.
Yeah.
So, you know, as long as you know what's going on.
Yeah.
It was maybe not the best idea for all of us, but we, you know, we got a lot of admin done. We're gonna call this person, call that person.
Yeah,
that's true.
But I was going to say also it reminded me of Rip Van Winkle, which is a famous American story in which a dude, he think he was hunting and in the mountains, and he came across a bowling game that sounded like thunder with these strange giant men bowling. They were bowling in the middle of the forest, and the sound of the bowling pins was like thunder. And he's like, wow, that's wild. And then he fell asleep under a tree. I think he drank with them afterwards, and he fell asleep under a tree and woke up like 20 something years later. And he like woke up, he had a really long beard. His musket was like completely rusted through and overgrown. He went back to the town and everybody thought he was dead. His kids were grown up. It was wild. And it reminded me a little bit of that. Obviously, it was not nearly as long of a time skip. But it is interesting, like, whatever, in the same way, Alice, I love it when people fall asleep like that for a really long time, then it's like, oh, what all happened? Did we specify, or did we ever clarify how security knew y'all's names?
Yeah, no, so they found that they were a part of the tea tournament and worked out that they were the Abricolads. Yeah, no, you had your stickers on you. That was what it was, wasn't it?
I think that in my head, I imagine them as being like craft stamps. So
oh, yeah,
like they've got it they've got the image carved in, and then you like put it in the ink, and then it stamps.
Mm.
So they each had they're all individual. So they had those, and they could use, as you very rightly said, Alice, to identify that they were indeed the Abracalants.
Now, I think there's something like that when you go to Japan. Like, you can go to different cities and get a different stamp per city. It's really cool.
Oh.
Yeah, I didn't do very well. I think I got, like, 3, but worth it.
Oh. I wonder if that was in any way an inspiration for the badge system in Pokemon. Because I know that the Spoon Quest was kind of inspired by the Pokemon games going around and getting badges.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm curious if, like, the stamp system, because in Pokemon, you have to go around to different cities, defeat the gym leader there, and then you get the badge, and that shows that you've been to that city and defeated that gym leader. So I'm wondering if that is in any way related.
That's cool. I mean, it's way less effort in real life. You just go somewhere and find the place that has the stamps.
But I love also the Twain Tide tournament ended while you all were asleep.
Yeah. Yeah. And without Orin.
I know.
Yes.
That's the harshest blow.
I know it's probably an unpopular opinion, but I'm so gutted because I loved the Train Tide competition so much. I wanted you to get all the spoons. I wanted to do the duck hunt, like, even though you were wanted as criminals in the... I wanted you to do the duck hunt. I was so sad.
I am sad we didn't get to do the duck hunt. The,
The
Hex probably wouldn't have allowed us to finish that off before we left.
They're so mean.
They are.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be amazing if, like, David would do a little spin-off of just, like, following a different team.
The rat juggling team. They could do it. I love those guys.
Yeah.
They're pretty cool.
I was looking forward to the climax of the Twain Tide Tea Tournament arc. Like, and then it was like, oh, sorry. It ended. I'm curious actually what David had planned for that had you all not fallen asleep for 2 days.
Yeah.
Probably just a disappointing handing your card in and them going, you've only got 3. Why are you even competing?
You are not going to win.
The Abracasads.
The Abracasads. Oh. It's funny because it's true.
Yeah.
I also love that you all were celebrities throughout this time. Everybody's like, oh, who was it? Who woke up first?
That was such a good running gag. It was funny every time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It legitimately was every single time. I also love that Juna is such, like... She is so willing to spy on people and, like, read people's minds and do what else. But she has in 2 episodes used scrying twice now. She is detect thoughtsing people everywhere, insight checking everyone. It's a very fun trait. And also the things that we've learned from the scrying have been really interesting.
Like, without Juna having scry, there's so much that we'd still be in the dark about.
That's true.
She's really helping us to keep an eye on what's going on around us. Like, I think she's getting a very particular set of skills. it's Arjuna. She's really, you know, she's all the intel, all the admin. Cool, we'd be lost without all those skills that she has.
Yeah. Even polymorph.
Even yeah. polymorph.
Somebody's got to turn into a frog.
Yeah.
She's your gnome.
Honestly, one of my favorite times ever.
David did the best giggle during that whole session. It was sort of, it was slightly evil and just slightly knowing, but also someone just full of joy that this was happening at all.
Yeah.
I love that giggle so much.
Yeah. I think he just loves it so much when we also back ourselves into a really stupid situation. It's just like going back to the whole we're in tomorrow moment. Whenever I listen like back to him just being like, yep, still looks exactly the same outside. Yep.
That whole sequence was so ridiculous.
I just think that's just the beginning of like, yeah, that no, that those knowing yeps from David. Mm-hmm. Very much just like, oh, okay.
And what you're saying, Grace, is also very true about like Judah being really key to things, because for all of like the lightheartedness and warmth, this is a very intrigue heavy campaign.
Mm.
Like, it's a lot of politics, like a lot of skullduggery and treachery and mystery. And even though like the party has like a real warmth that they bring with them, the world is like, everyone has secrets and there are conspiracies all over the place. And everyone is part of three different separate organizations, all of which are fighting each other. And it's like, oh my goodness. Which is great. It's part of why scrying is such a useful spell, and detect thoughts are such useful spells in this campaign in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think June has said it specifically. She was like, I just don't trust anyone anymore. Because like post-Heron, she's definitely like, taken a step back in how trusting she is with people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she'll go out and find someone to have a chat to still, but she will insight check them immediately.
Yeah.
And this, in speaking as somebody who was insight checked by Juna, or not even insight checked, not just insight checked, mind read by Juna. She wasn't super trusting even before.
No.
But yeah, I love the implication, or at least the little theory, that the magic that unbodied Petra may be the same as that which stored Enkidu's friends in his body.
That was cool. Yeah. So do you reckon that means that, oh man, I've forgotten who it is. Who's the person that's inside Petra? The Arcanist.
Oh, Chargelt.
Chargelt.
Yes.
Of course, there's a hall named after them. Yeah, them.
Yeah.
So there's a possibility that they were at the battlefield, like, making this stuff happen, potentially, as sort of the Arcanist, Archmagus type person. Maybe they were there. That would be quite a fun thing for them to investigate if they didn't have, like, a million other things on.
That's a good theory.
Yeah. Mm. Like this campaign literally could go on for like another year plus.
Oh my God.
Because of just how many years, in fact, just because of how many different like threads and storylines that can be like, I feel like it's unusual. Maybe it's just for me, for the campaigns I've played in, but I feel like for a campaign to have gone this long and people's backstories and in some cases subclasses to still be a mystery. Like, I still don't know what subclasses Orin or Guy are. I just know that they're both, I just know they're an artificer and a bard. Allegedly. Allegedly.
I think there might be Guy's subclasses on the Patreon.
I do think Guy's subclass has been revealed, because I think there was a...
I need to go back onto the Patreon.
There was a chat where they went into it in detail. Can I remember what it is? I didn't write it down.
Some stuff might have come up in a no small question.
Yeah, that's where I think I remember them saying, but I didn't write it down.
It might be hidden somewhere from you, Jeremy.
Is he roguey?
Oh!
Is he a little roguey?
I'm going to go onto the Patreon and have to listen to all of the different... I'm going to have to listen to all the Patreon content and just find the one moment. Ah!
Oh. It's one of the subclasses that... So, like, David's written the Way of Decorum subclass for Gwendolyn. I'm pretty sure there's a bard subclass. I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head, but I think I'm pretty sure that's what Guy is.
Mm.
But also Guy is, and I think he has said this, so I think I'm allowed to say this, but Guy is built like a rogue.
Yep.
But then is a bard because of his past. So that's, yeah. I think that's why he's such a like Ooh, what?
Yeah. Like he's tough to get a read on that way because mechanically, yeah, that makes perfect sense. Yeah.
He's not built to be what he is.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I think is just a great choice from Chris to just be like, I'm gonna just do this thing that is gonna completely be a pain in the ass sometimes. Well, certainly early on with this character that is completely charisma based. And I'm just being like, nope, don't have it.
Well, have we learned Oren's backstory, though?
We've got bits of Oren's backstory, but like there's lots of personal information, I think, that Oren we don't know. Like we know, you know, where he grew up and that sort of thing, and that he's looking for his parents and that he had his gnome mentor. But there's certainly feelings and personal stuff. I think Oren does hold very close to his chest.
The soldier is still a mystery.
Yeah.
Though we did have him message people just before Petra took over his body.
Yeah.
I think that's really the closest we've had.
There wasn't like a name. Yeah. It was just the feelings were expressed, right? Was there a name?
I think there was a name. And I want to say, off the top of my head, I'm saying Florian, and I just might be making that up.
Ooh, no, that does ring a bell.
But it also could just be from something else that has a character called Florian in it that maybe I've been watching recently. Who knows?
I also wanted to throw out y'all renting more horses. The horse, the horse story continues. We had Bessie, R.I.P. We've now have Pip and Lord Crumpet. And now we're adding four more horses.
They fully own them now, though. Like, this isn't any stolen horse business. That's true. They own this.
This is bought with our own stolen money.
Yeah, well done you.
Yes. Yeah, and Kidus is Clanius, right? That's his name, Clanius?
Clanius.
And there was a really good backstory, right? Because it's Alcibiades' father. That was cool.
Yes.
Yeah. It actually leads me to the next thing I was going to say. It's all the little love kernels, my goodness. The lore kernels that get dropped, through this series. Like the bits of like, oh, this was Alcibiades' dad. And it's like, oh, there's like a whole story. It sounds like there's an entire story and adventure that took place there. And I was like, dang. And then, the Fox Koi Blossom game. I was like, oh, this is great.
Oh, I love that.
Yes. The story of the rivers, like all of these little bits where it's like, whoa, we're just throwing this in for some flavor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like David wrote some beautiful, like he had, because he obviously as Ginger had said, oh, go find some folk tales. So that means he's got to write folk tales for us to go find.
But Vicky did the Fox Koi Blossom, right? Or did...
Yes, she did. Yeah. 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 No, that's Vicky.
That's a really fun thing to have.
She did a great job.
Yeah. She's had that one up her sleeve for quite a while. I think even actually since the beginning of the campaign, because she sent me some videos of the different hand signals, because of course, Gwendolyn and Juna will have played that. You know, that would have been a game that she'd played growing up with Juna. So it was important that I knew it for the backstory.
I was at the bus stop doing the hand gestures.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Blossom is my favorite.
It's fun.
I think she said it was like Joey doing fire.
Yeah. Yes. Listeners, we are all doing the Blossom action right now. It's a beautiful thing.
I've never seen that episode. I've barely seen any of Friends, but I still was like, I wonder if, from what I know of the character of Joey, how would he do, and this was literally what I had imagined that he was doing. But did you have any other thoughts about this episode, Alice?
It was mainly sadness about the tea competition being closed, and then intrigue at the end with meeting Eustace, and that fantastic sort of drop to the next episode with the, can you help me get my job back? That was great. Really smart.
Well, shall we get to know the next episode a little bit more?
Let's find out a bit more about Eustace. Why not?
Okay. So, episode 75, Shattered Tales. Eustace Hograthian had been bumped from his gig in favour of a flashier troupe named Duck Duck Bard and was keen to find help to get his job back. As Guy and Juna suggested a show with the Abraca lads and the winning team, Shattered Runes, Enkidu headed off in search of intel regarding the next leg of their journey. In hopes of befriending the Shattered Runes and getting them to join in with the plan, Gwendolyn approached the team with a gift of strawberry daiquiris. However, on being announced with the name she signed up to the tournament with, Carhilda, The Orcosian members of the team reacted coldly, with one even leaving the stage. When confronted, the woman rounded on Gwendolyn, demanding that she stay away, calling her an omen of danger, death, and disaster. Shattered by these words, Gwen ran to the edge of town in distress, while Juna, who had been watching the interaction from afar, cast detect thoughts on the Orcosian woman and saw childhood songs, games, and tales about the myth of Carhilda, a warrior-like figure being overcome by a calamity. On finding the shaken Gwen, Juna and Guy took her back to the Swan Inn to rest and process this new information. Eustace soon arrived to cheer them up and learn what had actually happened. The group decided to drink, dance, and kiss the rest of the night away. Returning drunkenly to the inn, the two bards chose to go off on a little walk together and play a secluded duet.
That is an interesting way to put it.
It was a saucy time.
It was.
I mean, even the introduction, you guys were just falling over each other to flirt with him. It was great.
We did, like, because Daryl wasn't there for the episode, and I think the rest of us are so, like, I mean, me and Vicky are by far the, like, naughtiest, we make the naughtiest jokes of the cast. But then, you know, Chris comes in a close second. So kind of like the filthiest minds were left to be in the podcast for an episode.
The two people who ground the whole thing were gone.
We lost our ankles. Oh no.
It was one of my favorite things that you've said as Grace, I think, in the episode, was when Enkidu walked off and he went, he's not fond of side quests. And that was really funny.
Yeah, I put that right in there for Daryl. I thought he'd appreciate that when he heard it.
It's true, though. He's very much like, I'm getting the quest done. Goodbye.
Yeah.
You're like, let's help this random bard guy get his job back while also maybe hitting on him.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Daryl couldn't be with us for that episode, but it just made so much sense for Enkidu to just be like, I'm out. I'm going to just make sure we're ready for tomorrow. Bye, everyone. Yeah.
I don't want to be a part of this, whatever this is.
Yeah.
The team up. I love the team up. But before I say this, I realized I never mentioned that the last episode, there was so much bush. And I'm in favor of it. I'm in favor of all the bush that we've had in the last two episodes.
So much bush. But now,
yes, I'm going to leave the bush behind, though, and talk about the team up with the shattered runes. Try and help Eustace get his job back, because that really kicks off, like, I don't know what David had in his plans, but I thought that was a great idea, because we've heard their name multiple times. It's like, who are these people who won? Again, going back to Pokemon, it reminds me of when you would see the people who won the Pokemon League, and they wouldn't show their faces, they would show their silhouettes. And to this day, like, I'm not even sure if we've met the people who won, like, the Indigo League way back in season one. We just saw their silhouettes, and it's like, oh, who was it? And that was how it felt to me when they're like, the shattered runes. I saw them standing on a podium, and I'm like, oh, just in silhouette. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Man. And it led to so much.
Yeah, it really derailed the side quest, really. Because, like, we did not care about Eustace's job as soon as we found out that... all of this. I mean, that was a lore drop. That was huge.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Playing Gwendolyn in that episode was like, we were all crying. Like, it was emotional.
It was a properly emotional one. It was beautiful.
Yeah. Like, each step along the way of the revelation, like, oh, we're using the name Carhilda, and the initial... By the way, is Carhilda in this case spelled C-A-H-I-L-D-A or C-A-R-H? Is it Carhilda?
I spell it with
Cahilda.
A K.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Is it K-A?
I don't know if I'm spelling it right, but I spell it K-A-R-H-I-L-D-A.
Okay.
I feel like that's how David spelled it, but I might be wrong. But that's certainly how I've been spelling it. But I am dyslexic, so...
Oh no, it's all good. I've been mispronouncing it then, because I've noticed, like, if I what I was picturing was Childa, so I was like, oh, Cahilda. But every time you guys say Cahilda, and I'm like, so is that the R? Is that the English R, the non-rhotic R? And yeah, it was. So her name is actually Carhilda.
Yeah.
And I have been saying it wrong this entire time.
Everybody knew what you meant.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad we were all on the same page. Even if mine's from a different edition of the book. Yeah.
The American version.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the American spelling.
Yeah.
But yeah, the fact that, like, okay, there was like the initial thing of Gwendolyn saying the name and seeming like, oh yeah, Carhilda Rose. Rose? Thorn. What? It's double barrel. Oh, okay. Which is like such a thing. Whenever every party I have been in, whenever people adopt fake names, it is an immediate car crash. It's just every single time people will immediately start flubbing the names and it turns into a circus. So I loved that. But then, like, yeah, they're upset. And then it's like, wait, Carhilda's supposed to go to the desert? What?
Yeah.
It's a culturally dangerous name? Like, yo.
It was horrific.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I was wearing a hat, I'd take it off for you, Grace, by the way. Well done playing that scene.
That description of you running off and sort of tearing at your clothes and just sort of feeling that need to kind of get out, even though there was no way that you could. Like, you just wanted to get out from being Gwendolyn. Or Gwendolyn wanted to step out of being herself. And I felt that was such a well-described moment. It sort of felt like one of those universal experiences. And I thought it was so well-described. And I felt really with you, with Gwen at that point. It was so great.
Thank you. I think David does it so wonderfully. And the whole cast, like, because, as Jeremy was saying at the beginning of this episode, because it's such a supportive cast and we're all really there for each other, it really means that when we get to these vulnerable moments in the story, that you do feel supported to, like, kind of go the whole hog. I think there's certainly, like, you know, you could be in other parties where actually I don't feel safe enough to kind of say what I really think is going on that's messy with this character. Mm-hmm. So to be in kind of a safe place where, okay, I'm just going to let this character be a mess because this is just like turning her whole world upside down, that, like, you know, she'd had this kind of name given to her by these kind of Orcosian holy people at her birth that meant all of this, which she had no idea about because she knows nothing really about her mother's culture and country. Like, I think that's one of the reasons she was so excited to go over and meet the Shattered Runes, because not all of them were from Orcosh, but, like, they were cousins and stuff. But so, like, to actually kind of meet some Orcosians, she was excited about that. And then it's just like, oh, maybe this is why I'm not even that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was heavy, but it was also, without sounding too much like a wanky actor, but it was also really cathartic to be able to do that as the character and kind of, like, explore that. So, just one of the things that makes storytelling with this group so exciting.
Mm. And this wasn't even a long episode, but I think there was a lot that happened in it, even though maybe not a lot happened plot-wise, a lot happened emotionally. And, I mean, David did a great job of sort of stepping back and letting the cast basically have a group moment of, like, everybody trying to be supportive of Gwendolyn and Gwendolyn going through it. It was really great. Really fantastic, I thought.
I felt like it reflected interestingly on Gwen's mum, who obviously we don't know very much about, but just the fact that the mystic orc people had made this sort of prediction that she was a Carhilda, and then her mum had left her away from Orcosia. That means that that's a protection, right? That she was protecting her. And then by leaving her, it's sort of meaning that there's no attention brought to Gwen, I guess. I mean, that might be a very charitable way of looking at it, but I sort of felt like it did reflect quite well on Gwen's mum.
Yeah, I mean, certainly from what Gwendolyn knows of her mum. Like, she kind of just has the romanticized stories from her dad, but to kind of go, okay, well, her mum was basically told this child doesn't deserve to live, sort of thing. And then she made sure that her daughter would still have an opportunity at life. I agree. It does kind of show her in a more favourable light. Whether Gwendolyn sees it like that, I'm not 100% right now.
Well, I mean, where we are in the story, you've just had it landed on. She's just had it landed on her.
Yeah, exactly. She got a process.
Sorry, I must stop saying you.
No, but to be fair, I say me, because I've been living with this character for like 3 years now.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be the closest I've ever been to any character that I've ever performed before. And this is a character that I've created. And so it's so easy to be like, oh yeah, and then I did this, because it does become really real. Mm-hmm. Like, especially when you're in those moments, like I can see in my mind all these things that they've done. Like, I can see the street and where this happened. Like, it's all in the brain. So, so you can say you, basically.
Yeah. When you're playing, I mean, it's often like the DM will say address as you, because it's like, yeah, you're in character. So, yeah, it makes perfect sense.
I think it's like the most immersive, like one of the most immersive theater experiences that you can have.
Definitely.
Really, it's playing D&D.
Yeah.
Being a whole other person.
Oh, and this is something I just looking at my notes, I wrote down that there were echoes of the Will Smith, "Why don't he want me, man?"
Yes.
In that
scene. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Like when Gwen's talking about her mom, I was like, oh, man, Gwen's feeling it. It's rough.
I don't think I've seen that.
And Juno is Uncle Phil.
Oh, yeah, Juno's Uncle Phil.
Oh, it's
from The Fresh Prince, Prince of Bel-Air.
I probably will have seen that. It's gone deep into the memory banks.
Yeah, it was one of the, I guess, the more serious episodes of the show where Will's dad shows up. And his dad and him, like, never really had much of a relationship. His dad was absent for most of his life. And so he's rocked up. And, like, Will is, like, really excited because he thinks they're finally going to get to reconnect. And then I think the dad just vanishes again. Like, I think he just straight up leaves. Like, Will might have seen him leave, or I think he left. But Will, basically, at the end of the episode, is in anguish because he thought he was finally going to get to reconnect, going to get to reconnect with his father. And so he looks at Uncle Phil and he's like, "Why don't he want me, man?" And it was like, oh. It's one of those things, like, on, even though it's in a sitcom, it's like, that's a tough one to, that one sticks with you, because it feels so honest and genuine, like, yeah, this is just a kid who really wants their parent, and feels a sense of rejection, and doesn't understand why.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's real.
Yeah.
So then Gwen was looking at people and saying, "It's okay, I'm just in anguish," as they were going by, which I thought that was hilarious as well. Then she got drunk and kissed a bunch of people.
Yeah.
Including a dude who looks like Enkidu. We got a Gwenkidu tease.
Yeah.
That was fun.
I was just like, the sort of people that, like, she might want to snog. I was just like, yeah, she probably want to snog this. Yeah.
Yeah.
A guy that looks like Enkidu.
Enkidu had a dream where he was chatting to a half-orc woman who didn't know her name. I mean...
And a warrior.
Yes, exactly.
That's true.
Actually,
yeah.
Maybe he was having tea with Carhilda. The original. The OG.
Whoa. Whoa.
Oh,
yeah.
I only just had a thought that.
Somebody message David. If it wasn't the case before, it should be the case
idea.
Now. Yeah.
Nice. Let's fold that back into the story. Excellent.
Yes.
So do you think Carhilda was a person and then has, like, tainted all Carhilda's after her? Because I thought it was sort of maybe a prophecy and the prophecy had become like a boogeyman.
Oh, that's interesting. It could be both. It could have been that there was a Carhilda way back in the day who defended the orc people, or at least the people of Orkosh, from some kind of invasion or terrible disaster, and was maybe successful, maybe not, but regardless, there was such hardship and death that her name, even though she is a person who tries to stand in the gap against danger, her name became associated with that danger. Like maybe her rise to power was coincided with that. And maybe there was some sort of prophecy or prediction that another figure like that would arise. Maybe there's even been multiple iterations of this.
Oh my God, Kai Hilder like is disasters the Slayer. And-
Oh my
Into each
God,
generation
I
a Slayer is born.
So...
One who will stand against the forces of darkness.
Alice, that is so tasty. Yeah. I love that idea.
Somebody call David! Get David on the phone now!
I mean, oh, maybe one day you'll have the... I mean, this has been actually quite a like fun way of doing superfan chats. I don't think I've given too much away. No, I haven't.
Oh my God, your poker face has been so good.
So maybe you get David on Superfan Chats at some point. Maybe if this is the new format, who knows? It all depends on when we're free. Okay, listeners, we'll see what works.
It'll be cool though.
I like hearing your theories live in person and actually being able to, because you know, like when I'm listening to Superfan Chats, I'm like, oh yeah, blah, 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 blah. But you guys can't hear me. I'm just talking to myself.
You've entered the podcast, Grace. Oh, you're in with us now.
I am in it.
I'll never leave. Never leave. Never leave.
But yeah, I thought it was really nice. I think it was a cathartic episode for everybody because it had been a while, I think, since we had like a big emotion. There'd been a lot of plot, and a lot of exploration and intrigue and things like that. But we hadn't had a chance for everybody to just be like, hey, we love each other and we're going to support each other and we're going to go kiss a bunch of people. Yeah. It's going to be great.
Yeah. And I think it was the right people to be with. I mean, well, it was the Winged Thruple, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's true.
And they are the two that Gwendolyn is particularly close to. Like, I think she's close to Orin too. And like, you know, Gwen, Kidu are trying to make a friendship happen, you know, slowly. Every time I think they're going to be friends, they annoy each other again.
I always think of that as just the dynamic of the friendship. Like, to me, it's like, yeah, y'all are friends. Y'all just fight all the time.
That is just their friendship now.
Yeah. They would absolutely lay the line. I feel like they'd lay their lives on the line for each other.
Oh, absolutely.
100%. In a heartbeat. Yeah.
They really respect each other. They just don't
always
get on.
They'd argue about it later.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. There is respect there, I think, most of the time.
It's like one of them would nearly sacrifice themselves to save the other, and then they'd have a big argument about it where they're like, you didn't have to do that. I was fine. And it's like, well, but I couldn't tell. You
no, I saved your life. God.
Yeah. But certainly from an emotional level, having Guy and who she began the adventure with, and obviously Juno, who's been part of her whole life, to be with her in that moment. And then she did her favorite thing, go and imbibe lots of stuff.
Yo, Gwen likes to hit the substances.
She does. I mean, she's 20.
Away from home the first time.
This is her gap year. to the max.
On my gap year, I saved the kingdom.
Yeah, she likes a drink. She likes a bit of frosting. And that is currently one of her main coping mechanisms. So that's fun.
Oh, boy. This party needs a therapist.
They really do.
Do we have any last thoughts on this trio of episodes?
I just loved Gaius ending up with Eustace at the end of the episode.
That was cute.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially because, like, the joke at the beginning was, like, Gwen's flirting. June steps back when Juno starts flirting and Gaius has got his tongue all down his throat already. And then at the end, it came true.
Yeah. What about you guys?
Okay. I thought it was a really solid trio of episodes. We had plot development, we had intrigue, we had fun. We had the tragic end of the Twain Tide Tea tournament. but we're picking up the pieces and moving forward. And I'm excited to see where we go from here. Because it feels like we're at a point where, once again, the party needs to be like, okay, what's our next goal? Like, it seems like there's a number of things that folks could pursue. But yeah, the question is like, where are they going next? What's the next plan?
It feels like the folk tales, or at least sort of finding a route through story, is kind of the quest now. They've set themselves on this quest to find out about the Henges, and that seems to be the key to it. So I guess it's just collating stories, which should be a really fun path, like for us as listeners, certainly, but for them. And it almost like the Carhilda thing feels like it folds into that, just because it is essentially a folk tale just from a different country or continent.
Yeah.
So it's part of that quest almost, sort of we're finding out the truth through story.
Yeah. Information we can't find in a library because it's vocal tradition. Is that the right word? Vocal tradition?
Oral.
Oral, thank you. Yeah.
Hey.
Oral.
Sorry.
That's totally on theme, really, Alex.
We've had Bush.
I've left the Bush alone.
On that note,
thank you for letting me come and crash Superfan chats. It's been a joy.
It's been super fun.
Please,
super fun.
Please feel free to leave the jacket here, because those aren't cheap and we can't afford to just let you take them.
Sorry. I'll just make sure I fold it up nicely and
thank you.
Just brush off the crumbs from the biscuits I've been eating.
Yeah, that's absolutely fine. Don't worry, Jeeves will launder it.
Great.
So anyway, thank you all for tuning in. We'll catch you next time for more Superfan chats. And I forgot the sign off. What do we say?
Anon for now.
Oh my goodness.
It's been a while.
All right, let's give it a 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3.
Anon for now.
We did.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.